Hi, I'm Josh, and come on down to Crazy Eddie Swimming Pools. Buy yourself a 25-foot deep swimming pool today, and you'll get a ladder not included for free.
Wow. Hi, I'm Matt, and I would like to point out that there is apparently something to be said for episode 4 of things, because much like the original Star Wars film, episode 4 of Creepshow was delightful.
It was a new hope.
It was just like, I was trying to think of the fourth Hellraiser, but I couldn't think of it. But
oh, that's best not to.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think that one and Critters have shown that by 4 we're just off to the races and a race you cannot win. This is Charlie Dunn in Austin. I mean, at some point, like, you know, we've seen multiple things where you have like in Waxwork and other types of things where you have like, we're gonna use a body and we're gonna do the thing and whatever. And don't you think at some point, like, just bury them in a ditch someplace and then, like, do, because it just seems like so much trouble, like chemicals and tubes and all kinds of whatnot, what's it? And it just seems like, gosh, man, it just like, seems like you're just making it more hard than it is, killer guy. You know?
Hey, you know what the best middle name for a serial killer who kills his victims with wax would be?
What's that?
Wayne. And this is Harsho Hot Dog. Hey, so before we get into our short this week, though, even though right before I clapped my hands to start this, I said, let's get into the short this week. But I want to say a quick word about Twin Cities Horror Fest. It was fantastic, as usual. Saw some amazing shows, and thanks to Matt, we have some interviews with the creators responsible for those shows. My highlight for the whole show was definitely The Feminine Inhuman, featuring Reverend Matt Kesson and the Aaron Shepherd Dance Company, which it was like combining chocolate and peanut butter and getting a Reese's peanut butter cup that also was wrapped in a $100 bill that also made you feel a sense of euphoria for several hours, like greater than the sum of its parts. And the sum of its parts would have been fine. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It was real good.
Okay. It was really fantastic. That was one of my favorites this year too. Real strong lineup this year. Actually, I was quite impressed with, the festival as a whole, and as always, like, there's things you like more than others, but there was like something that everyone was doing regardless of the show I saw that I was just like really interested in what they were doing or how they were pulling it off or like what they were getting at. Like, it was some real fun stuff. Like, it was a real smart group of producers this year. I really liked working with them,
for sure.
So yeah, and thank you for any of you that came out and got to see us. We had some really great interactions with folks. And had a couple of super fans that went to all 5 nights to see entire run. That was great.
We had that wonderful couple who appeared to be in their maybe late 60s who came up and said on the Tuesday night show that was late, they said, you know, we mm-hmm. would usually be in bed by now, but we stayed up late for the show. And that just feels, there's yep. no better feeling than that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was delightful.
And thanks to Charlie's careful curation and solicitation, this year we had a shared email account that we all could see, so I could see how much back and forth Charlie did to get all these films lined up. So I have new appreciation for the work that you do. And we ended up with, I think, 35, 36 short films. We had one night that had 5, one that had 8, and 3 that had 7. So if you carry the square root of 4, then you get, you know, whatever. And we had an average of 35 people a night. So I think that was pretty excellent. I think it was like 162 people all told for the entirety of the film festival. And that includes our 11:30 slot, which, you know, not going to be well attended, but everybody's got to have one. Our winners, by the way, on night one, the audience favorite was Lily. That was the incredibly harrowing audition that turns into kind of a casting couch situation and then mm-hmm. turns into a murder situation, but on the right side of things. So that was good. Right. Then we had Peephole the second night, and I can't say it without thinking, Peephole, who needs Peephole? But there's a weird time twisty one about the guy who sees a murder through his peephole, but he can't see it when he opens the door. And then he gets dragged away and murdered while his neighbor looks on and can only see it through her peephole. So super cool.
You know what's great about that one? Just real quickly to throw out about that one. So that one is the production company is based in Mexico Mexico City, if I'm not mistaken. That one came from a lady that I knew who had some involvement with a Slovenian film festival. Mm-hmm. And if you can find that on the map, you get $5 and a handshake. But it was like, and what was amazing is not only that the film festival exists, but some of the stuff that they got on there, there's no way that we could have used because they're longer form stuff where they're like 25 minutes, 32 minutes, stuff like that. But holy fuck, man, some of the stuff that they have, like, I gotta see if I can somehow get a hold of a few things to show you all because, like, there's a Japanese one that was just blew my brain at the back of my head, and there's a couple other just really neat stuff. This is a genre fantastical film festival in Slovenia or Slovakia or somewhere, and it's just sort of and goddamn is that cool. Not the least of which is that it's a Hispanic or your Mexican production, and it's like that one makes me really proud because it's just sort of it feels really neat to be able to have a bunch of people in the great state of Minnesota be able to see a Mexican short film that screened at a Slovenian film festival. Like, that just really, really tickles me to no end.
Yeah, that's just United Colors of Benetton. Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. Night 3, our winner was Pig, which was a horror comedy that featured some self-doubting body dysmorphic home invaders and some agreeable gouts of blood, like very well timed. Yes. So that was fun. And then we had the Helsinki Mansplaining Massacre on night 4, which is basically Evil Dead.
Well, it's exactly what it sounds like.
The Deadites are bros. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was lovely hearing like mansplaining in another language.
Yeah.
And I want to get like a transcript of it because there was one thing she said that was translated dude bros. And I so want to know what Finnish for dude bro is. If you speak Finnish, let me know. And then our final night, the winner was the absolutely charming Repossessed Homes.
Yes, yes, yes.
With Cunning Man and Dead Animals coming in a close second and third because apparently what we like almost as much as like beautiful horror comedies about realtors is animal cruelty.
Yeah,
it was fun watching that theater react.
Oh, just yeah, there's like, just like the pile of dead dogs and cats, and
it was real touch and go with some people. I think during that, yeah.
Well, like, the thing I told Josh, Matt, when you were restarting your computer, I told him that one of the ones that I was also just super, I always get super tickled every year for a few things in particular, and like Dead Animals is one of my like kind of group of ones that really tickled me because it's like it's so like just off kilter. Like we were talking about how it's kind of like Wes Anderson by way of Tim Burton, or kind of like original old Addams Family or Edward Gorey kind of influence, where it's just sort of like, you know, dark upside down world sort of like place. And just the look on the man's face where it just isn't mugging, isn't big or gigantic, but this look of like satisfaction and like a level of peace when he sees this fucking cat as like a little motorboat.
Yeah, just like, cat boat chasing ducks is like my favorite.
It's just like, but it's the look on his face. It's just like, I wouldn't say it like maybe tear up, but it was like, oh, that is so good.
It is a really good like beatific smile. Yeah.
It's just sort of like something about that one that's just like just tickled me, and I was so pleased with that one. That one is another one. If I'm not remembering correctly, like I think that one may also have been from the same Slovenian film festival, I'm not mistaken, but that one really gave me some joy. And also Caterpillarplasty also gave me all the joy.
Yeah.
I was like, yep, get to subject people to this. Like,
people talked about that one for the rest of the week after we saw it. It was great.
Which made me happy. I didn't hear anybody say anything bad about it either.
I didn't either. Like, everybody was just like, whoa, that was messed up and awesome.
It was like a Pink Floyd album cover plus. Yeah, it was like if Ralph Steadman had too much pizza for dinner one night and then took an Ambien. That was kind of where that landed.
Yeah, we had a really great lineup this year. It was a ton of fun putting those in front of an audience. And yeah, the good lobby conversations throughout the week for me, because I spent a lot of time there. And yeah, it was real fun having people be like, because I'd show up the next day and there'd be someone in the lobby already. They'd go, what won last night? And I'd be like, Josh took the ballots home. I'll find out when you do when it gets posted. Like I said, I think it's probably this one or this one based on the half of the ballots I collected. But yeah, people were very interested. And that older woman that was there for all five with her daughter, she successfully picked all five winners.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
So she was just like, nailed it. I'm like, you are so cool. I had some really great conversations with those guys. They were a fucking blast.
One final thing I want to throw in there is I was sad that I wasn't able to get up there. Missing out on anything Aaron Shepherd does is a damn travesty. So that was a bummer. And then just be able to see folks and be up there with their buddy and all that kind of stuff. But just work life, you know, that kind of stuff, whatever, is just insurmountable. But the other thing that is just to put on the record is that, like, you know, we as Josh, you know, can attest, but it's like, you know, we are in communication with well over 90-100 different filmmakers or more in some cases, and production companies and all kinds of different stuff. And in some cases, we're able to work out a thing to be able to get stuff in there. Other times, we're not able to get something together. Or in some cases, the last couple of years, we've had people that have had to pull stuff because of production and possibility on features and some other things that have happened. So there's different reasons why different things don't get in. But I just sort of say ultimately on the record that, like, anybody that's ever farted around with us over the last 5 years and doing this kind of stuff, whatever else, we're glad for every interaction, whether or not a film made it in there or not. And we're glad for every opportunity to talk with folks about getting films in front of audiences. And so, you know, there's a lot of stuff that wasn't in for this year, certainly, but it's just, you know, they're all aces as far as that goes. And so I'm just really glad for the opportunity to be able to get stuff in front of folks. And that's kind of the end goal. Even if you liked this year better than last year, or 1 year better than the other year, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's all taste, you know. But yeah, mm-hmm. It's just I feel like we've done a good job of putting things that I think folks would never even have a chance to see otherwise, especially in the last couple of years as we've gotten a little more. I don't know if it's street cred or just people can actually Google us and see that we exist. Because I feel like the number of things that, like, as we mentioned, I think, to the audience this year a couple times, like, I think the first year, most of the stuff we got, you could probably have found somewhere, whereas it's getting to be less and less of that, where if you don't see it here, you don't see it unless you go to some other film festival as well. So that's pretty exciting to be able to put that in front of people. I think that's really cool to be able to do, so.
Yeah, I'm still jazzed about that.
If you miss something here, you truly miss that. Yeah.
Well, like our buddy Holger, who did the wonderful Happy Bee Day, where sort of like it just popped up on the internet finally, and it's just like, and he's a snowboarding goofy sort of a kind of a world traveler man about town, and so he's got stuff to do. But it's sort of like that one was 3 years ago from them, or 4 years.
It's
ago.
It's a long time.
It was a while ago, and that one just popped up, which, you know, blessed be that's available to folks. But I'm just really glad.
If you watch that trailer,
comes, you know.
If you watch the trailer for Happy Bee Day, you can see our laurel in there.
Oh, do you? Nice.
Yeah, that makes me happy.
I've never actually gone back to look and see if those have gotten added to the shorts that we've done, I suppose.
I've seen a couple of them in the wild, yeah.
Oh, that's fun. Nice.
It's always great. Because most of them are just the same laurel. And then there's like a couple that use the angel wing kind of variant. And we are the only Frankenstein hot dog.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely have that crown pretty well settled on our
for
brow.
Good reason. Yeah. Like, all right, well, let's talk real quick about the short Slick, S-L-I-K-K. Demerits, off the top, it's 20 minutes long, and it has, like, vaporwave credits that have nothing to do with the actual short itself. And then when we get to the short itself, I felt like it was pretty lacking there, too. But what do you got there,
Trent? This material, I was just going to ask you guys, and Matt, I think especially you probably know, is this a Lovecraft story?
I didn't think so. Okay, because I basically took it as being kind of a poor man's Frankenstein.
Yeah, it's like a Frankenstein riff was how I felt it was. Yeah.
So I just kind of took it. I just, because I wasn't sure. I didn't know at all. And so I just was been wanting to ask you all. But it's like, I just took it to be like this very Lovecraftian, like, we don't really have a narrative thing so much as like, it's just this like kind of creeping. But it just sort of like, you know, I don't want to belabor the point. Like, this is just, it wasn't well edited. It wasn't well edited. It wasn't well paced. The acting is all over the board. There's no like suspense necessarily. There's no build up. And especially something of this length, like you have to have an arc that means anything. And so I just be like, I take nothing away from them from trying to put something like this together, but I just, this one was just felt very long for no real reason and just kind of, it didn't do anything for me. And so I kind of, you know, wasn't, but that's why I was wondering if it was a Lovecraftian thing, because it just had that kind of feel where it's just sort of like, just kind of like a 3-day old meatloaf kind of a thing.
So yeah, I gathered.
If it was based on any kind of Lovecraft story, it's so heavily veiled from any of the source material that I can recall.
Okay.
That it's so far divorced from anything that it's unrecognizable to me, not that I'm like the world's foremost Lovecraft expert, but like I've read all of the works of Lovecraft at least 3 times through, and this one didn't jump out. It's like, oh, this is a version of something. The closest literary reference I got was Frankenstein, just with the reanimating the dead thing, which, you know, I think we've all mentioned that just coming in at 20 minutes and not having, I think, more than 4 minutes worth of stuff to say was a huge strike against this one.
Yeah. So I think the narrative outline, as far as I could tell, is that we have, you know, what Klaus von Slick or whatever the fuck the guy is. It has got the kid's father's body and is reanimating it. And that's why we have the body with like the cannonball lodged in the eye socket.
Yeah.
And then kid goes wandering around the castle and accidentally Polonius's Frankendad. And then it's revealed that it was Frankendad. And then kid like falls off a cliff running away from the like other monstrosity that is like the Igor figure. And then he wakes up to uncle reanimating him. And I guess that's the story, but it's really incompetently told, and it took a lot of effort to just pull just the base level narrative out of it.
That was a much more concise narrative than I would have been able to put together, actually. Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like there's, as far as like framing shots and stuff goes, there's a base level of competence here, and there's a whole lot of ambition for sure. But yeah, the acting talent and the editing and the ability to piece together a coherent story and the way that it drops at the end just infuriated me that I had spent 20 minutes on it. So
yeah,
this is definitely a skip for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is a thumbs down on me, for me too. I just, yeah, this is what happens sometimes when we watch one sight unseen is we, yeah. I will say I did get a chance to vet a short for this week while at the horror festival, actually. Duck was like, "Hey, have you seen this?" and showed me a short film that I loved. So we'll be doing that one this week.
Awesome.
Well, thanks, Duck.
Yeah, good job, Duck.
Oh, one more demerit before we move on. The end of this, the blessed end of this, then kicks in with a kind of a synthy score, and like I'm more positive than most people on synthy scores. I've got many of them in my record collection, and like I like a lot of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But this is not a synthy thing. This is a plinky plinky harpsichord thing, not a synthy thing.
Yeah.
And it was like when it's the synthy thing kicks in, I'm like, whoa. What are we doing here? Like, this is not what we're doing. There's plenty of public domain harpsichord blinky blinky stuff that you could put at the end of that. So just like, just was one more kind of thing where I was like, I just damn.
What's the very very old Matthew Broderick movie where he's like the guy turns into a falcon and it's got Lady Hawk, yeah, that has a really synthy score that is completely jarring with the movie.
Like, it's a score. Yeah. It's a score when you listen to it by itself. It's great.
Yeah, exactly. But
you listen to it in context of the movie. You're like, wait a second.
It's like, what the fuck? That's the last sound I expected to hear. Like, you're expecting some like John Williams shit, and then you get this like synthy thing. And you're like, okay, that's jarring and weird. But yeah, I don't know. The same thing here. It's because when you were about to talk about the soundtrack, I was like, it should have been like a harpsichord or something. And then you said exactly that. So I feel like that says something. So anyway, yeah, this one is a a pass because it's just not great and then inexcusably long for how not great it is. Yeah.
Swing and a miss.
But yep, sorry, folks.
Let's get something that hit, at least for me, a little bit harder than that. Let's talk about pool. Or la piscina. And whenever I think of that, I think of my Spanish teacher, Mrs. Stringfield, who told us that piscina was the name and you could remember it because it's what you never want to do in a pool, which was the height of high school humor to me. So,
wow.
La piscina. Ms. Garfield, I've never forgotten that, even though I forgot your name briefly. Thank you.
That's amazing.
So the pool is kind of a survival horror thing where we have a kind of schlubby, except he's model gorgeous guy who's
slubby. My brain quit or my stop talking Seth, my tongue.
If Seth Rogen and Zac Efron had a body switching comedy,
yeah,
there you go. Would be the one with Seth Rogen and Zac Efron's body. Oh yeah, mm-hmm. So slacker who's working on a film set and they're filming an underwater scene in this huge tank that's like a public or maybe like an Olympic diving training. Yeah, it looks like an abandoned Olympic something.
Pool.
Yeah, because it's we see when it's drained that it's a good 15 feet deep at least.
Yeah, enough to and be like high no dive
shallow
shit.
End. Yeah, there's no shallow end. There's no stairs. There's no ladder. Which is important because he ends up trapped in the pool as it drains, kind of falls asleep and wakes up on a raft and wakes up when it's drained too far to allow him to escape. So then it's him versus a crocodile that has escaped and has swum its way up into there with his dog kind of by the side of the pool barking down at him. And eventually his girlfriend turns up to further complicate things. But at the heart of it, this is a kind of a survival horror, like stranded thing. They just happen to be in the middle of a major city in the dried out pool. So initial impressions, this starts with that kind of in media res thing that we don't love, where it's like this thing and then 2 days earlier. And it does give you a heavy lift at the beginning because the CGI crocodile is pretty bad.
In that opening sequence, it's worse than any point in the rest of the movie.
I thought so too. That's what's so
weird. Yeah. Which confuses the hell out of me, or it makes, and I don't know this, but it did make me think, and Josh, I'm glad you mentioned, because like it's one of those things where it makes me wonder if that was it, if it was a tack on, or if it was a kind of a re-editing or a reshuffling or something. Because he never looks anywhere close to that. Like, there's a few shots where, like, it's okay. But, like, it never looks that bad in the rest of the entire movie. Or I wonder if
maybe that was shot as a sizzle reel to try to get funding from people. And then, you know, once they had some more money, they made the rest and just never reshot that.
Yeah, because it does seem like a
first draft of that crocodile, you know?
Because there are sequences later on where it really does look very sharp and very well done. And very, very professional. But
it does feel like... It feels like maybe the movie was delivered and then whoever was financing it was like, it takes us too long to get to the crocodile. You got to throw another crocodile scene in there. Yeah, we only have $5 left in the budget. But yeah, so if you give it that for a minute, and as a guy who has seen Lake Placid versus Anacondas, I was inclined to give him that for at least a little bit.
And Chupacabras versus the Alamo.
Oh, yeah. Well, geez. To me, this ends up being a pretty... tense and like agreeably like non-stop actiony thing. Like this does what survival horror is supposed to do, where it keeps giving him an almost out only to yank it away with something even more cruel than the last one. Just seeing how close they can get him to out and then yank it away for a bit, so it almost has this cruel sense of humor to it. So for me, this was very fun throughout. Initial impressions, y'all?
I really enjoyed it. I did have the advantage of Josh being like, all right, the crocodile looks silly. Just move past that. And so I kind of went in knowing that. I think I would have gotten past it anyway because there's enough other stuff going on. But yeah, so like, okay, fine. The crocodile looks a little silly. But and like I said, there's every imaginable obstacle is invented to throw in front of this dude to make you be like, where eventually you're like, come on, like this is too much, but I love it. Give me more. it's real fun. Like, it is, it's pretty impressive for, yeah, being kind of just, you know, man versus environment for the most part. This gave me a lot of, it was tickling back in my brain, and I was like, oh, Burning Bright. That's what this reminded me of. With being trapped in the house with the tiger, and you're, you know, limited space you can't really get out of, and you're having to try to, like, stay safe and kind of keep moving, even though you don't have that many places to move to. And, yeah, this kind of has that same thing, with, okay, you're trapped in a place with a vicious animal. Very different movies, but something about that just kind of rang a bell in the back of my head, and I was like, okay, that's kind of what it's,
But in this one, it also gives you that, the elements, too, where he's stuck under the sun and then under the rain.
Yeah.
And there's, like, the threat of drowning when things start to fill up with the rainwater.
Oh, God, yeah. This the level of misery subjected from, like, all corners of reality for this poor dude and then eventually the couple is, it's almost comical.
Yeah. I loved how they set up in the beginning. They do a really good job of laying out all of the pieces they're going to be moving around.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, okay, so here's the drain cover and here's the couch and here is... Oh, look, the cigarette case dropped from his pocket and went down the grate. Like, so all those things that they set up in the first 10 minutes all pay off. Yeah, here's
the insulin needle sitting on the table. Like,
well, and then the other thing, too, one of the many things that I liked about this was, you know, they're doing this commercial shoot or video shoot, something, whatever they're shooting there, you know, and doing the thing. And, you know, when you think about, like, people who shoot music videos and people who do short films and feature films and all kinds of different things, that you have, like, you know, you have a world, the world is your oyster to a certain degree. But, you know, also, like, there's a lot of places, but you're here in this country and then other places where, like, you slipped on the wrong ravine and, like, you're just fucked in with a Tuesday. Or if you're in the wrong building, or if your car craps out in the middle, you know, whatever. Like, there's so many things that are just in plain sight that can be, you know, very much like this type of a thing. And him falling asleep on the raft is a little bit like, we'll kind of give it to you. But, you know, it's just one of those things where you just kind of go like there's abandoned places all over the fucking place. You know, there's abandoned amusement parks, and there's buildings, shopping centers, all kinds of shit. And it's sort of like, you know, you think, like, 99 times out of 100, it's not going to be a thing, but it's like, you're wrong place, wrong time, and then it's like, what are your options? Like, you don't have very many. And that's what I really like about, this setup, was it's just sort of like, it felt very, like, real is not the right word, but it felt very, like, grounded in that sense, because, like, there's a little bit of style thing that happens where, especially in the last part of the thing, where it gets a little bit action movie-ish, a little bit, but it just, there's just something about, like, there's something about the way that the setup works where you're just sort of like, I could see just a dumb situation happening where you just end up in a scenario that you just, there's no realistic way out of.
Yeah, well, that's like the, you know, the folks I know that, you know, used to do, like, all the, like, urban exploring thing and go to, like, abandoned buildings. But you always went with, like, a team of people. Y'all had radios and phones because, like, yeah, if you, you know, are climbing around an abandoned building and a wall falls over on you and traps your leg, you're just there if you're by yourself, you know?
Because oh, for sure.
If you're four floors down in an abandoned hospital and out in, like, 5.5 miles out of the nearest city, you're just there until the next weirdo decides to come rummage through it. Like, and that could be months. So, yeah, there's places that even, like, in the middle of a main area, like a metro, that just, oh, no, that's just the boarded up building. And if you happen to find a way in through a vent, who knows if someone else is going to try to look around just to see if someone's in there. Like, yeah, you're just kind of fucked. So, yeah, I liked the sense of isolation while still surrounded by civilization is an interesting dynamic.
Well, it reminded me, when I was growing up in Prescott, there was these areas where they're doing, like, a lot of construction, and they had these things that I'm not going to describe it particularly well, and I'll belabor around it forever if I try to, but they're basically, like, very large cement, like, kind of like like, pyramid's not the right word, but it's kind of like this rounded thing. Essentially, it's like this thing that they put into the ground that's going to be like a sewer main thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, they put it down on the ground, and then the top of it would be create the entrance to the sewer thing. And so there's a couple of those out into these construction sites. And I remember, you know, like we lower ourselves down into there and like, oh, look, right now we're in this little cement room. Like, and then get back out of there and like, oh, now we're out of that cement room and stuff like that. But it's like, given one that you think is like not as deep as it is or whatever else, or like maybe the one that doesn't have the little ladder rungs on the side. And it's sort of like, now you're in a thing with a concave sort of a concave convex. I don't know, rounded, where you can't get to the top of it. And it's like all of a sudden, like I'm just a guy and now I'm sitting in this thing that I can't jump out of easily. And it's sort of like this, but there's like houses, you know, half a quarter mile away or whatever. And there's cars driving by or whatever. And nobody's going to know I'm in here.
But you might as well be in Egypt. Yeah.
Yeah. Might as well be. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, and so that's what this room, that's what made me, this made me think of, like just this idea that, you know, hop, skip and a jump in these situations. Now, yeah, the alligator in there, that kind of changes things a bit, but, you know, it's,
right. Well, what is the alligator a metaphor for?
Ooh. Urban blight.
Well, it does have the eggs, right? And then, you know, it's fertility, but then they eat the eggs. And so that, because he's been nervous about his girlfriend being pregnant. So, like, when they eat the eggs together, it's like them accepting that she's not going to have a baby.
That was one thing. Oh, that was another thing that that's another thing that I really liked. Actually, by the way, just from a, you know, dude that spent a lot of time around reptiles for a decent chunk of my life, like, I love the idea that this thing probably broke out to be able to lay eggs in its own wherever it wanted to be. But, like, alligators in general are kind of lazy. Like, they don't, they, you know, you always see videos of them, like, taking down some antelope by some water or crocodiles or whatever, all this kind of stuff. But when it really boils down to it, like, they don't do a lot, really. And if something requires a lot of effort, they're just not into it. And so, like, once it's got the things there and it's just doing the thing where it breathes or it just opens its mouth and just sits there, like, I love that. That it wasn't just, like, relentlessly pursuing them. Like, yeah. Just some, like, serial killer with a bunch of teeth. Like, it was just, it was alligatoring the way an alligator would alligator. And it's like, I really appreciated that aspect of it. Like, all it wants to do is just sort of, like, it's got its spot now, but a lot of its daily activities is sitting going, and that's what it does. And it's like, yes, that's awesome movie. Well done.
Yeah. You know, so it's just, that's good basking.
Yeah, exactly. And it's dorky to point out, but I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
I just love throughout this, it like both, it takes turns flirting with how close can he get to getting out, and then how much damage can he soak before he's just done.
Yeah.
So you get both of those. Like, you get the guys who come and like actually get the ladder and climb down into the pool and then go back up the ladder, and then he just barely misses climbing the ladder. But then you also get him chomped in the whole gutty works by alligator.
Yeah.
And yet continues in an unbelievable way, because it's not, he's not like bitten in half. He just has, you know, little alligator divots in his chest meats, you know, and he's all right. So I do love the way that this is kind of set up and the way it goes. I was prepared to be mad if they sacrificed his girlfriend and let him out.
Yeah.
And I was a little bit like, I was bummed about the dog, but then I thought of Matt's expression of disgust if he saw that I was bummed about the dog, and I endeavored to be less bummed about the dog.
Because you know I loved what happened to that dog.
But it was like, I thought they treated it with some respect. Like, it was,
they did, yeah.
It was genuinely harrowing that he couldn't save the dog. And
yeah, and he's emotionally distraught. Felt that, yeah.
He didn't just get over it. Like, having to climb out on the dog was hard for him.
Yeah. No, and I thought that's the thing. It's like, it's, I loved that they were just like, no, we're going to not pull the punches here and just, like, give you a real, like, gut punch in this moment. And I was like, cool. Like, I like it when films go there, you know? So yeah, this movie did one of those things where it gave me one of the things I hate most in movies, which is fingernail trauma. And one of the things that always pleases me, which is something bad happening to a dog or a child. So, I really liked this movie. Like, it's hard to talk about without just going, like, set piece by set piece, you know? Yeah. With, you know, just being like, and then this happened, and then this happened. And that's, like, not exactly interesting. I feel like it's better just to watch it, because it's fun to watch them build on their own. But yeah, like, I think the biggest hurdle really is, like, well, there's two, I guess. It's the not great CGI on the gator, so, like, get over that. And then, yeah, they're, like, it's like watching a season of 24 where there's a new crisis every 16 minutes. And you're like, good God, like how much can happen to this one guy in this span of time? And it's like, yeah, fuck you. That's why it's a movie. Like, you know, it's that whole thing of like, if you enjoy it, you'll let it all go. And I really enjoyed this. So I was like, I knew it was a little eye rolling, but I was having fun watching it. And I was just like, all right, I want to see what happens next. Like, what's the next thing he's going to have to deal with? And I really enjoyed it.
Well, you know, too, the other thematic element, Josh, you mentioned with the eggs and the other kind of stuff and the girlfriend, that part of it. The other thing that I thought was kind of, and I don't know anything about this filmmaker, so I don't want to say one or the other, but having known or knowing a lot of people that work in the entertainment industry, this his angst about like having a family and having to provide for child thing, that's a thing like for a lot of people in the entertainment industry where they're like, well, I spend 1 month a year in my house cumulatively. But I'm in New York, I'm in Chicago, I'm in Florida, I'm in Boise, Idaho, I'm in wherever the fuck. You know, I'm a sound guy, I'm a camera guy, I'm a whatever. And like this idea that how do you actually support yourself, let alone anybody else for that matter, is like, that's a pretty real thing. And I thought that was kind of an interesting element to make him seem less of a aloof dick and more of just sort of like just having to deal with reality in a pretty stark and unpleasant kind of way. And I was like, I thought that was a good framing thing for his character. So it didn't just seem as though he was just kind of like this, oh, I don't want to settle down. It's more just sort of like no, it's just legitimately this tough thing.
He didn't give me that, like, the Dave from Little Monsters vibe. He didn't seem like just the classic slacker guy, because, like, he has a job and it seems like something that he enjoys that he's trying to make a career out of.
And he seems to actually know what he's doing. Different. Like, he's good at it, it seems. It's just, you know, your journeyman type career. That's tricky, you know?
Like, he's a little shitty to his girlfriend, but not improbably, like, ridiculously shitty. They have a nice couple of moments, and, like, their conflict arises pretty naturally out of them having different wants and needs, you know?
Yeah.
It was just nice to see that, like, it wasn't relying heavily on the shitty guy trope, and it didn't make a lot of hay out of their relationship being unhappy. And they end up kind of, it's not like the story of him learning to be a grown up or anything, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think
so. It's just that bald ass survival story. So yeah, I don't know. I ended up pretty satisfied with this one, and I would definitely recommend it. I would say for me, it's a 7.5. out of 10, no diving, no running, no horseplay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm pretty much right there with you. I'll say it's a, 7 out of 10 for me. A lot of fun while not getting too bogged down and up its own ass ever. I feel like you're meant to be a little on the edge of your seat, but also enjoy this. You're not supposed to like slog through it. Like some survival films are just like a chore to watch because they're so grim. Like this has high stakes and high tension, but isn't like a bummer. You know, it's a fun movie to watch. So yeah, 7 out of 10. Pizza dogs.
Pizza dog. I'm kind of right at that same ballpark. I'll say 7.5. I'll say 7.5 out of 10. Immense. Multiple day guilt after one scene in the movie, and then immediately thinking of Greg Louganis, and then being like, ugh, "God damn it, brain! Why do you?"
I had that same thing too.
It's just like fuck.
Yeah, I totally had that thought.
Stupid brain. Ugh.
How much is that? How sickening is that crack too? By the way,
oh god,
yeah.
It's like, oh, is she dead? Oh, she's just dead. Well,
it's also just all too real. Dead.
Yeah.
You know, like that's because it's not played for like over the top, like it's so gross and fucked up. It's just like, nope, this is just what happens if you slip and fall. Like it's, yeah, it's so matter of fact. Also
too, like she doesn't, it's not one of those things too where she's, you know, like reckless or dumb. What she is she's like a young person and like she doesn't see the danger. She doesn't realize there's no ladders on the sides. She doesn't realize what's happening. She's like, oh, I'm going to jump in. Well, that'd be fun. And then it all plays like there's a lot of, for lack of a better term, like a lot of smarts to the way that whole setup is done. Like, I think it could have been a lot clunkier and dumber, but it's just, I think that plays so well. And then once, when she hits your head, you're just like, oh, god damn it all.
Yeah.
Like, this just, oh, man. It's just, it just plays one more thing into it. Like, it's just, it's just this poor guy. Yeah, man. But, yeah, it's a cool-ass movie.
Yeah.
Word. Do you guys want to take a break or want to roll?
I can keep rolling.
Yeah, I can roll as well.
All right. Should we talk about Wax Mask a little bit? La Máscara de Cera?
Let's. Not, I don't know that I have a ton to say about it.
Yeah, not the mask of Michael Cera, but the mask. Hmm. So this was Dario Argento coming up with an idea and pitching it to Lucio Fulci, who was too kind of old and sick to do it, and then 10 years later, 15 years later, one of Argento's proteges picked it up and did it, right?
Yeah, basically. It was like, I think it was basically like they talked, and then they was like, okay, we'll have Fulci be involved in the thing, and then it's just his health was such in bad shape, and then it was like, okay, well, I don't know what we're going to do, how to like finish this off, and then basically, yeah, it's the guy, wasn't he the guy that did the, was he the guy that did the church or not? I'm not sure if that's right. Or was involved in the church.
That was either Argento or Fulci. I can't remember. I think.
But no,
Fulci.
the guy that came in and worked on it later. So it's sort of like it's one of those things where, and you got to figure that like, how much was Fulci really involved in the thing? Like, I mean, I can't imagine it's going to be a whole lot, really. Like, I got to think he wasn't in the best of shape, but. It's still one of those things where it's weird because it's like mid late 90s or when it's all said and done, but it's like it's playing into those styles of a lot of the Italian horror stuff, which actually, like, at least for me anyway, like, this clipped along better than like, had a little better pace than a lot of the Italian ones. Like, it just, and maybe that's just because it was newer.
Yeah, it could be. Gosh, fellas, this is one of those that it really seems like I should have enjoyed this more than I did. Because it has all of the pieces. Like, it has the killer with the weird mechanical hand, and that's kind of cool. It's got just ridiculous buckets of gore. It's got kind of silly animated electrical effects for some stuff. I don't know. I started feeling disconnected with this because of the dub.
Yeah, the dub is
but
terrible.
But like, there's shitty dub on everything, including Suspiria, sure. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's just because this was like the hatchet of giallo, kind of. Like, oh my god, the sentences that we had to string together. But it didn't feel like an authentic product. It felt like an extended homage that didn't really have anything to add. If that's not too unkind.
No, I mean, I think that you think you're kind of barking up the right tree. It's like, I thought there were definitely some sequences and some parts that had some meat to them, and I thought very interesting. But there are other parts where it does feel paint by numbersy, and it's sort of like, okay, well, we're just kind of getting to the next sequence, and you have to have the love interest lady, and then you're gonna have the kind of the madness, and you're going to have the thing of letting her in the secret, not letting her in the secret, and she can be a victim, and she's not going to be a victim, and yada, yada, yada. And you just have all that kind of back and forth stuff. And it's like, there's a lot of great visuals for sure, and there's some interesting things to look at, but, narratively speaking, it's about as tab A slot B as it can possibly be, sort of in that respect. I just, when you get into like this idea that's like, it's supposed to be like a remake of House of Wax, I guess. Where it's sort of like, and these all kind of play similarly. You just kind of go like, there is no law enforcement. There is no like oversight. There is no whatever. And it's sort of like, and also things like when you're watching a movie screen, like nothing smells, but like in real life, things have smells. And so it's just kind of like, there's just all those basic things. You just kind of go, for Pete's sakes, like, okay, whatever. But it's just kind of like, I never found it boring necessarily, but it was one of those things where it doesn't have that very strong, like, deeply personal ring to the way that even some of the more nonsensey giallo kind of stuff does at times. But, you know, it's like I said, still wasn't necessarily bored. And my God, the last 20 minutes are just sort of like, it's like, we're just going to do it all. We're going to do all the things. We're going to have T-1000, T-1800.
T-800.
You have the whole T-800 situation, and you're going to have just this cop that finally kind of, oh, wait, what's going on? Is some crime happening? Oh, yeah. And then kind of like kind of gets involved, you know. It's like, so, you know, it's I will just say, like, I'll say with a wry smile that I wasn't bored.
Yeah, I can't make the same claim. I was definitely bored. I mean, it's
I was bored too, Charlie. Sorry, man.
Yeah, we've seen a few versions of House of Wax, and I think at least a couple were better than this. And so it's like, you know, it's at this point the House of Wax story is kind of tale as old as time, right? Like, you kind of know what you're in for. So that's, I think that's like when you're getting at the whole like tab A slot B aspect of it. It's like, okay, like, There will be some slight differences from one to another, obviously, but
like even like Tourist Trap, you know, like, yeah, it's like, it's just sort of, it all kind of follows the same thing.
Yeah. And so it's just like, okay, so it's going to be kind of like a House of Wax thing. So like, someone's murdering people and making them into the wax sculptures, and eventually someone will discover that and blah, blah, blah. So it's like, okay, so like, but like, then it's not so much that like, you know where you're going, like the trick is the journey, right? And I just felt like this one was just, I found it tedious, just kind of waiting for like the next thing to happen. Like, I didn't really care much about, because it's always, and it's, that's sort of like the giallo element that's kind of brought in, is like a lot of people talking to each other and like being ignored by, you know, the local constable or whatever. And that's supposed to like ratchet up the tension of like, no one will listen, and I'm stuck in this situation, and I'm scared. And it's like, yeah, I get it, but like, maybe we could cut 20 minutes out of the middle of this. And because like that last chunk is pretty fun when you have your, like, you know, like the peeling off the fake eye to expose the real eye of the Jack the Ripper victim that's from the brothel. Yeah. You know, like shit like that, that's fucking great, you know. And the, you know, the robot running around and like all the faces hanging on the wall that, you know, they're swapping around, like that stuff's cool. The hilariously animated fire on the wax museum near the end is just like, mwah, perfect. But it's like that kind of grabbed my attention. And then I enjoyed watching the little metal hand try to grab things, because it was very much like, you know, those toys you had as a kid that you squeeze the lever and then like the hand goes whoop and can't really pick anything up.
Occasionally it seemed like they did some really rudimentary stop motion.
Yeah, I thought so too. There were a couple shots that looked
like
that. To wrap
it around stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, this never really developed a pulse for me. You know, a couple interesting scenes and stuff like that, but overall it was just like, okay, this is knowing too well, I think, what the arc would be, and then having it not do anything that really got me excited or had any kind of tension or anxiety for me with the story, you know, was, because even the House of Wax remake with frickin' Paris Hilton, I liked that better than this, you know, that was pretty fun. And this one I just kind of meh. So yeah, I'm gonna probably come down a lot lower on this one than you probably would, Charlie. But yeah, I just it just came off as being a kind of pedestrian effort from some folks that are usually taking bigger swings, I think.
And I can't really say what needed to be done differently. It just felt like, I don't know, the energy was off. Something didn't feel right. And I think it's just the difference between like people making the best of the facts that they have on hand and coming up with something that ends up being kind of an iconic look, and then people just meticulously recreating that later.
Yeah.
If that's it. But this took me two tries to kind of get most of the way through. I just could not connect with it on any level and kept going, okay, wait. That's the girl? Is she grown up now? Or is that the little girl? Who's the little girl? That was a dream. Was that a dream? Oh, is she? Oh, she's the one that... Oh, fuck it. And just like all of the people with black hair I couldn't tell apart.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Joshua, because that was the one part that I just completely, and I feel silly even for admitting it, because it's like, it's, upon retrospect, it's very obvious. But like the whole thing with like her mom, the blind lady, as like, I was watching that part, like, who the fuck is this lady? Like, she's, like, because I was like, is it supposed to be the same person, but she's old? Like, that can't be right. She doesn't look like, what?
Well, that was very much my experience, yeah.
But that in particular, the mom part, I was just like, did they even say that she was the mom, or are we just supposed to infer that she's her mom, or some, who's her, I'm my own grandpa. Like, I don't know what's happening. Like, that whole part of that.
Yeah, at some point, she just says it, and that was kind of where I think I locked in on it, but.
Well, and then also, too, like, her, the main girl's relationship with the newspaper guy, it was like they had like three casual conversations sort of situations, and then all of a sudden it's sort of like, it's like bodice ripping sort of in the front shop window type level. Like, what just happened?
Yeah, three casual conversation encounters in which he kind of pisses her off and acts like a douche.
Yeah, and it's like, and he's not like so overly terrible that it's just like, oh, for God's sakes. But it's just enough where you're like, okay, this doesn't, whatever. And then the next sequence is like, now they're doing this like undying love situation. I was like, what?
Yeah.
What's happening here? And then also you have the whole like side, you have the whole side quest with sex worker lady and Dweebus guy, and it's just sort of like at her conversations with folks and people and things, and like that whole thing, like, it just, I know it has to be in there because you have to have enough of that as from a content standpoint, but like it just that didn't seem to serve much purpose. And also it's just kind of like one of those things where I think, Josh, to your point, like, it's just, there's a lot of those components that are there. Are they necessary or important? I think the answer to that is probably no.
Hmm.
Yeah, but
what's your number?
Yeah, I mean, I was still, like I said, I will still contend that I was not necessarily bored per se, and I still found the level of set decoration and crazy costumes and all the stuff in the little wax museum deal and just this. All those elements I found to be super fun to watch, and I just think, you know, the last 20 minutes just go completely bug shit. So that's super enjoyable too, and you know, not unlike Phenomena, where you're sort of like, we're gonna take the dark haired girl and we're just gonna just surround her with nonsense, and it's like, this kind of is in that same ballpark, but not nearly as enjoyable as Phenomena that goes, which is one that I really dig. But this was just kind of all over the board. It makes me wonder if you had subtracted 10 years from this, when Fulci maybe had his bearings better and could have been involved all the way through, could it have had a little more spark to it? Like, maybe. But like I said, I still wasn't bored, and it was fun enough to watch. So excuse me, I'll say 6 out of 10. I'll say 6 out of 10. Wait, is it Jim Beaver that was playing Jack the Ripper, stabbing the guy, or is it like, it's just a mannequin that looks a whole lot like Jim Beaver? Out of 10. Because he looked like him. It was crazy.
Do I know who that is? I don't know who that is. Is it an actual beaver?
No. No, it's he's a kind of a character actor guy. You've seen him in tons of stuff, Joshua. You look up his picture, you'd recognize him. But he was in Deadwood. He was in he's been shit tons of things.
Yeah. I may have watched the whole of this, or may have dreamed 10 or 15 minute intervals in between. I just could not engage with it on any level. So to me, this is it's well made for what it is, for sure. It's just, it's not my flavor. So I'm going to say 3.5 out of 10, the whole balls of wax.
Nice. Yeah, you hit my exact same number, Josh. Had I written mine down? Yeah, 3.5 out of 10, wax the rippers. I do think the wax things were pretty cool looking. I really liked having the apparatus to like strap the victims into so that they'd end up in the pose needed. Like, I thought that was kind of a neat little thing. I don't think I've seen that in other.
The look on her face is pretty harrowing. The prostitute lady, when the machine's moving and she's all out of it and all like delirious, but she's like looking at her limbs as they're like moving, and it's like, that's kind of harrowing. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, there's some good moments here. I just felt like it didn't tie together in a satisfying manner for me. So yeah, it's I think there are better versions of House of Wax out there. It is still hard for me to believe this movie was not shot in like the late 70s, early 80s, because the look of it is just so that. You know, like, aside from like the slightly cleaner colors and, you know, camera stuff, this does look like it could have just been one of the original, like, early giallo stuff that we watched from these directors, because it does play into the style, I think, very well. It just doesn't, like I said, doesn't really have a pulse, didn't really grab me. Yeah, it is an interesting, like, you know, like House of the Devil tried to recreate, you know, like that 70s style movie and did a really good job. I think this did perhaps intentionally, perhaps almost because they couldn't help it, because that's just what they're so used to having done. So yeah. It doesn't feel like a movie trying to look like an old movie. It just feels like an older style of movie. It's interesting. But I thought that was more interesting than the movie itself. So, yeah, kind of a meh from me.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back with our Creepshow episode.
Yes, sir.
So next up, we have episode 5 of Creepshow.
4.
And is it 4?
Yeah.
It's 4.
Do I hear 2? How many?
Yeah, 5 will be next week, most likely. One for the money.
And then there was 2 for the show.
Gotcha.
3, we were getting ready. Anyway.
And bingo, this was it?
It's a pretty solid couple of shorts here. We've got Companion at the beginning, which has some DNA of the Herald Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Only it's less of a, like, pouring anger into a scarecrow until it comes back. It's like lonely old man builds Companion. Turns out Companion uses really nifty stop-motion vines to suck blood out of things. So yeah, it does. Old man neutralizes said Companion. Only for Companion to come to the aid of a kid who's being bullied by his brother, I guess?
I think it's his brother,
even stepbrother? Yeah.
Yeah, which is very much a villainous, bigger kid in the manner of, like, the most brutal Stephen King movie.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, very, like, Karate Kid villain.
Yeah, very. Yeah. I thought of Karate Kid and I thought of It a lot.
Yeah, so that one, I think, like, story-wise, they actually rounded it out kind of nicely. I like the story with the old man and how that folded in. Kind of dug the way that the companion was not necessarily evil, but was definitely, like, wasn't good.
Well, I think it was just amoral, right? It just didn't have any concerns with right or wrong. It just was.
Yeah, I was like,
yeah, it wasn't Pumpkinhead. It was more of the, right, sort of like the sort of like a thing that exists.
Like, I'm hanging with this guy, I'm protecting this guy and I are simpatico. Oh, here comes food.
Right.
Like, oh, no, that was a Girl Scout. That's not food. And he's like, oh, well, shit. I guess maybe like
you tell me now.
Like guard dog almost?
Kind of, yeah.
You're just like, he'll go and chase a squirrel and eat a squirrel. Doesn't think twice about it.
Right.
Squirrel just happens to be Girl Scout.
Yeah.
Not Squirrel Scout. But
Squirrel Scout.
Squeak, 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 squeak.
Yeah. Squirrel Scout cookies.
I think the star of this is definitely just the all those beautiful, beautiful vines. What do you guys think?
This is fantastic. I thought this episode is really, really strong. But yeah, like, it definitely has, because I was thinking we were going to get a much stronger, that this story would hew a lot closer to Harold, you know, from Scary Stories and such.
Sure, of course.
And I liked that it was different. Because I got to enjoy a story that I was like, well, I guess I don't quite know how this is going to go. You can kind of intimate where it might go based on, like, the setup. But, like, all right, so this is different. So what will we get out of this? And I thought it was really satisfying. And it was nice to have it be, like, well, you know, we always talk about the idea of, like, doing remakes and, like, find a way to make it your own or whatever. So, like, if they started with Harold, they certainly made it their own story. You know, got the bones, but it is like, nope, this was worth doing because you're not just telling a story we've heard a million times. And I liked the way it turned out. I thought it was cool. So
That's a great way to say it, Matt. I think that actually kind of encompasses why this has a little bit of a spark to it.
It's not a retelling.
It's just it's a interpretation in the best sense of the.
Yeah. Or if you want to do the douchey Hollywood thing when they do a remake now, it's a reimagining. But I think in this case, it actually is that, because they did have to come up with some original ideas and material and executions on it. So, yeah, I really dug this.
It feels like a story Stephen King would have written.
For sure.
For sure. But not in a pastiche way, just in a, like, they figured out how to mine that vein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it hits the Creepshow Tales from the Crypt kind of, like, womp womp ending of revenge that I like a lot. So, yeah.
But it's also not an evil or dangerous entity with a goal or a plan or, like, a to-do list. Like, it just sort of exists. Like, and I kind of dig that. I kind of wish that there was more of those type of things where it's sort of like, we're not necessarily, like, you just don't have an upwardly mobile, you know, seven habits of highly effective monsters type situation. It's like, it's more just sort of exists in.
It's more elemental, I think.
Yeah. I think that's a harder story to tell, I guess. And maybe that's why, but it's sort of, I would love to see more things like that where it's sort of like, you're not, you know, like Pan in Pan's Labyrinth, where you're like, he's kind of threatening, but maybe not, but maybe he is, but it's just, he kind of serves his purpose, and it's like...
Yeah, maybe just kind of doing what he do.
Yeah, it's just sort of, there's a mystery to it.
Chaotic, is it chaotic neutral?
Yeah.
Do we think?
I would say.
Is it? He does seem like he has some loyalty to whoever is holding the cane.
Mm-hmm. Or he's beholden to it somehow, yeah.
I love the couple of scenes, though, where he's just chilling with the guy who created him.
Yep.
Like, that is pretty nifty. The whole creature design on that, too, is great.
Really good.
He's like, and I got, you know, some bones from the yard, and like, oh, there's some more bones. Oh, those don't look particularly human, but whatever.
Yeah.
Or animal. Or anything I've ever seen, but whatever.
Yeah, there's a lot of shrugging. The way
that
it moves
its head, too, like... That was another thing that that kind of I really loved was the way the thing moves its head and the way that it moves its, like, its shoulder frame to the side. Because what it reminds me of is it reminds me of those old apparatus type of animatronic or kind of puppeted sort of monsters where you, like, you have, like, four dudes just off screen, like, moving levers and stuff. And, like, its whole job is to go point A, point B. Point A, point B. But you surround that armature with a bunch of cool stuff.
A ton of air compressors, and there's like eight dudes holding switch boxes that have four different levers. Like,
yeah, it's just, there's something about that. Like, if you really put the craft into it, like, you can make a really special, really neat thing. And this, that had that vibe to it. Almost to the point at which, like, you know, sometimes with these maybe lower budget but interesting type of projects like this, I kind of wish they had more of that trust and that more of that faith in making those things jive, because you can really get a neat effect. And certainly this sort of creature is in that realm. You know, it's like, whoa, that's really got some presence to it. And it's lit beautifully. And I don't know, just it's got a lot of stuff going for it. It's a cool deal.
Yep. Very into it. Second story?
So then the second story, I told Matt, I don't know if I told you this, I told Josh this. Once this one ends up in the elevator, like, I had to stop watching. I'm like, nope.
Oh, really?
Nope. I'm done. I gotta watch this in the daytime, because it was one of those things where it's sort of like, it's a confined space for one thing, and then for two, it's an unnatural or supernatural thing that's occurring, and then it's sort of like, and there's no, we're not actually seeing the thing move, and so is it like all happening in her head and her guilt is overtaking her? Is there, how much of it is the legit supernatural part of it, or like what all is happening? Any which way, however you slice it, it's all occurring in a very confined space. And I was just like, the first time she looks over at the thing and the head's moved, I'm like, nope, done.
Yeah, there's some great, like, telltale heart possibilities there.
Yeah, absolutely. 10,000%. It's just like, oh god.
It also reminded me of Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yes.
Where you can never be quite sure if it moved.
Yep.
If the body moved in between shots, but there are times when it looks a little bit angrier or a little bit like it's leaning forward a little more, and yet you never really see it move, and yeah, it messes with your head in good ways.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
After the beginning of this, where we have the kind of the, you know, powerful CEO lady who passes over her lover for promotion, so in order to keep her with her, and then in the ensuing fight, lover ends up with her, like, Woman of the Year award embedded in her brain.
Which is pretty great.
In a very gnarly way, like, yeah, the whole pulling the whole thing out and then go, ugh, and then kind of pushing it back in.
Yep. Yeah.
It's good stuff. But I was so relieved that it didn't go from there into just, oh my God, how can we hide this thing? Because I could have seen like the guy coming back and seeing it, and then she's drafting him to help her hide the thing. And like the whole point of it is, how do we keep from getting caught instead of having it be this really tense back and forth between basically her guilt over everything she's done to this woman and the just the fact of her death. So I thought that was cool.
Well, and also too, this may be a little bit of overreaching, but like I don't think you have necessarily clear cut villain and hero per se, because like the girl's reaction to not getting the promotion is like it's pretty hard edged and pretty bitter and pretty angry, and it's like one of the first thoughts that I had was like, if there's a whispering behind closed doors that like they're involved in a romantic capacity and she gets a big promotion, how does that go?
Yeah, then you're fucked.
Then it's like, but then she also has a point that like, oh, so you don't see that I have any value or talent, but you just want me to be like by your side for pictures.
Yeah, and, arm candy.
And whatever, arm candy situation. So like she has a point there. And so like, you know, Lydia is not necessarily the clear-cut villain. Girl is not necessarily the clear-cut hero in the sense that they're both whatever. And then this thing happens where there's an altercation, and then it is we see that it is a legit accident. She didn't bash her over the head with the thing. There was like a shove, and it was like this, you know, kind of a whatever. And it's kind of one of those things where you're like, at that point, do you literally just go like, oh shit, this terrible thing happened, I gotta call the cops immediately? And it's like, if you don't make that decision, then does that instantaneously make you the villain? Or are you freaking out? Or are you trying to save your own skin? Or do you realize looking at the situation that like you're kind of screwed because like this does not look and cannot look to anybody with a brain in their head that, you know, this is anything other than like, you know, you've actually killed this lady and this is real bad and blah, 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 blah. So it's kind of like there's just so much going on in that little changeover where I just don't think it 100% like indicts her per se, but it does put her in a funky situation almost to the degree of the original Tales from the Crypt from like the early 70s, where you have the lady who kills the husband to run off, you know, and then the escape killer crazy guy is you know outside the house, and so she can't call the police because she's got the dead husband in the house. Yeah. And she can't go out of the house because there's a killer crazy guy, so you're kind of like stuck in this impossible situation. Like she's in the situation where like it was a legit accident, but because of the circumstances of a bunch of different things related to this, how you got to this point, like she's not gonna it's not gonna look super innocent. And so it's like, what's going to happen there? And like, how do you get out of the situation and all this kind of stuff? And I love that part of it. It was just once they're in the elevator and all the harrowing to get to the elevator, I was telling Josh this, Matt, where like I know Roxanne Benjamin, the lady who directed this, like mm-hmm. I know one of the three actors in the thing, and I was still too scared to finish it. I was like,
that's awesome.
Because it was creepy. It was tense and just, yeah, it's just unsettling. And like, where are we going with this? What's the rules? And it's like, man, yeah, I like this one a lot.
It made me think of the whatever episode of Into the Dark set in the elevator. And
this compares
very favorably to that. Like, I thought this was more tense and actually did the whole claustrophobic and not sure what's happening thing better in 22 minutes than that one did in an hour and a half. Pretty much.
Yeah. I thought this is, again, like this whole episode is real strong. I think you're right, Charlie. This chunk has a lot more moral ambiguity and depth than it has any need to for most people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, like, I think this would be a lot more two-dimensional. And honestly, like, a lot of the Creepshow Tales from the Crypt morality plays are pretty two-dimensional. You know, like, that's kind of the whole idea. Like, based on the EC comics and stuff, they're pretty heavy-handed and simple. And this one, I think, does a good job of giving you, just an awful, awful situation that seem like they do a good job of making it like, fuck, this could just happen by accident to anybody and you're just boned. It's neat. I liked this segment better than I thought it would based on how I saw it, you know, in my mind's eye before I really watched it. I was expecting something a lot simpler and maybe hokey, and I ended up enjoying it a great deal. So yeah, I dig it.
Yeah, so for both of these, I think we had a real strong week. I would say 7.5 out of 10 for The Companion and 8 out of 10 for Lydia Lane.
Yeah, I think I would be the same numbers there. I like both of these. And, you know, we've talked about this many, many times. I'm sure folks listening can relate to the idea that you love all these type of things a ton. But then the problem of it is that just makes the task more difficult. And so when you can get something that'll get under your skin in just such a way, or you can appreciate things that maybe you haven't seen in the exact same way before, or, you know, in different kinds of ways, like, it gives you kind of a charge. You know, like it feels really great to see those kind of things. And so I think both of these segments did enough to really bring something to the table beyond just being like Nicotero's involved and the Creepshow name, and it had more going on in its head than just to kind of paint by numbers and be done with it. So yeah, I like both of these quite a bit. So I would say the same number. I would say the same thing, 7.5 and 8.
For my sanity, when I try to put numbers up, do you want to average those into one or the other?
7.75.
I'm okay with 8 for me.
8 for Josh, 7.5 for Charlie.
No, 7.75.
7.75 for Charlie. Dick.
Because I like you.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I think I'm right there as well. We did a lot of agreeing this week. That's interesting.
No, we didn't.
Thanks, dude. yeah, I think I'm going to probably go, yeah, I'm going to go with an 8 on this one as well. Like, this is, I just think if you had to like give someone like a real good indicator of like the potential of this new Creepshow series, this is a great episode. They're not all this strong, but you'd be like, look at how good this can be. Like, this is why I want to see more. So yeah, awesome episode. So, yeah, 8 out of 10, scary stories told in the dark.
Indeed. And just renewed for season 2. Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, yes, sir.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with next week's films. Coming up next week, we are going to pick up a couple of streaming things and also finish out. I keep thinking we're one Creepshow ahead, but gotta keep one Creepshow.
Well, I was just saying, one Creepshow over the line, another one Creepshow over the line.
Exactly. We are going to watch the next episode of Creepshow, episode 5. We are also going to watch Nightmare Cinema. That's also on Shudder. And we're going to watch Eli on Netflix. And our short is called A Play, and that will be in the show notes. And I will point out that I've been Josh this entire time and say bye.
Real quick, one more time, thank you to everyone that came out and supported us at the Twin Cities Horror Festival, and for everyone that supported the horror festival in general. It was a ton of fun this year, as it has been every year for me. Sadly, I had to work my day job a few nights, so I wasn't allowed to be there every single moment like I normally try to be. But yeah, had a great time, so thank you for everyone that helped support that and came out and saw our show or others and allowed us to have our little ice cream Christmas in the end of October. So thanks for that, and as far as y'all know, I've been mad this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Charlie and Austin. Take care. Have a good week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other, and we'll talk towards you again real soon. Take care of yourselves. Bye bye.